Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week, the eventful voyage of Eustace the Warthog, with author of Sea Spray and Whiskey, Norman Freeman. Congratulations go to Ryan Seaton and Matt McGovern on their silver medal win in France. The ISA initiative Sail Spree kicks off this weekend, and we've results of our competition. The L.E. Samuel Beckett has arrived into the naval base at Hall Bolan. First, this week on Seascapes, to the North Tipperary Angling Centre in Ballinderry, where trout anglers looking for some action can be assured of plenty of sport. Opened by local farmer Pat Stack in April of 2010, the stocked rainbow trout fishery has now made a real name for itself among keen anglers from all over the country and abroad. A canal has been dug out beside the lake for anglers who wish to try their hand at river-type fishing. Many fish went into the lake as trout of over a pound and have now doubled in weight over the months, with a number of them touching the 4-pound mark. Tom Hurley went along to Ballinderry and spoke to Pat Stack on the lake for Seascapes.
We stocked it 4 years ago with rainbow trout and some brown trout, and there's natural pike in it, perch in it, and we have been tipping along there. People seem to be very satisfied with it. It's as near to wild fishing as you'll get. Once the fish are put in, they have to fend for themselves, so they adapt to the natural food in the lake very quickly. We have a very wide range of fly life on the lake, and it's as near to wild fishing as you'll get. We're about 20 minutes from the town of Nina. We're about 12 miles from Nina. We're basically about a mile and a half from the shores of Loch Derg. I usually close around the 1st of December, and I open again then, weather permitting, around the 20th of March to stroke 1st of April along there.
And why did you decide to open this kind of adventure in the first place?
Well, I was always a fairly keen angler myself, and fishing on Loch Derg for a good few years, it can be tough. It can be difficult. It's hit and miss. Even though there are some fantastic trout on Loch Derg, but the majority of times that you go out, you can have a good day, and you mightn't see a fish in for weeks again. So I used to fish this lake myself for coarse fishing, for perch and for pike for a good few years, and I just got this idea into my head that it seemed to be an ideal. The quality of the water is fantastic in it. I thought it would be an ideal situation to stock it with trout. So I spoke to a certain number of people, and I thought it was a very good idea. Got involved in with the fishery boards, and they gave me the go ahead after a good bit of discussions with them and things like that. And we stocked it on April, the first year we stocked it in the month of April, and we opened it about 3 weeks after stocking it when the fish were settled down, and we're tipping away nicely since. The lake is Lochavan. There's about 18 acres of water in it. It's a very deep lake. It's averaging around 30 feet nearly everywhere. The bank drops off very quickly, so you're straight away, you're into about 18 foot of water, and it pans out about 30 foot all over.
It seems crystal clear.
The water is crystal clear. It's limestone lake, and at times, have a nice warm sunny day. If guys are out here, and if they haven't watered, they just take a glass of water out of the lake. It's so good. The quality of the water is brilliant.
You did go to canal as well, did you?
That is the natural outlet of the lake. So we deepened that, and where we have the boats launched in is about 300 metres from the lake. So there's a natural canal that you come out along to get out onto the lake. I have some stands on the lake as well, man-made stands, three stands on one side of the lake, which people can fish from off of the stands as well. The rainbow trout range from about a pound and a half up to about 9 pounds, and the browns are from a pound to 2 pounds.
And how does someone go about stocking a lake with trout? How where do you get them?
There's a fish farm nearby us in Roscrea, and they provide a very good service, and they have excellent quality fish in it.
And how often would you restock the lake then?
I'd restock maybe 3 to 4 times in the year. The majority of the fish that I'd be putting in would be a pound and a half up. Early in the year, the fish are feeding on the buzzards, you know, and there's an awful lot of natural food on the bottom of the lake, so the fish are inclined to stay deep until the fly life starts. And then we have excellent fishing, like you have the duck fly din, and you have olives, you have the daddy long legs, you know, and we have a brilliant hatch of mayfly on the lake as well. So, you know, there's an abundance of fly life on the lake. So the majority of the fishing is on the surface. Now, you have difficult days then if the fish aren't up on the surface. Well, then the anglers, you know, they will go down. They'll use a different method of they'll use sinking lines and things like that. And, you know, that's an option. The biggest fish that was caught was last year. It was 9 pounds, 2 ounces. Rainbow trout. The majority of anglers, they like the boats. You know, you can cover all the lake, and you get a nice drift in it there. So the majority would have a preference. We have 3 boats on the lake. That's all we allow out. So at any given time, 6 anglers is the most that's on the lake. It's a must that everybody has to wear their life jacket, and two to the boat, 2 anglers per boat. We try and encourage catch and release, but if the other angler, if he likes to take home a trout for his tea or a present to a friend or a thing, they're allowed to take 2 fish, and the fish are beautiful to eat. They're really natural pink. They're fantastic fish to eat. They are extremely tough fighting fish. People cannot get over. It's account of the quality of the water, the depth of the water, and the condition of the fish. You know, if you get into a trout there, a couple of pounds weight, he'll empty your reel a couple of times before you'll get him into the landing net. Last year we had maybe 3 or 4 parties of people from Holland, and we get a handful of French people as well. So, but tis mainly Irish people, keen anglers, you know, and advertising basically that we do, tis mainly word of mouth. It's not as difficult as what people think. You know, if you have somebody to show you, I'd have often people come here if there were holidays in the area and they wouldn't have an idea about fly fishing. They just want to go out on the lake for a day and maybe catch a fish, and I would take them out and I'd give them a bit of tuition, and you know, with a bit of luck they will always get into a fish, and you know, it makes their day. It's by appointment only, for the simple reason we have only the 3 boats, and you know, sometimes there can be pretty good demand, weather depending. The charge is €25 for the day per rod. That includes your boat and includes your electric engine, and you have a tremendous chance of having a great day's sport.
Yeah. So we might as well give it a go. So
yeah, we'll give it a go. We'll go to the southern side of the lake. There seems to be a bit of a hatch of duck fly coming up, and we'll just give it a go here. See how we're going to get on. We might have a bit of success. In the course of our conversation there, while we were speaking, out of the corner of my eye, I seen a fish feeding there, so I'm just trying to cover him there now to see what's going to... Would he take the fly that I have up? I've just a little duck fly on there now at the moment, and... just see... There you are, he came for a look there, but obviously didn't take it. Now, Tom, we're in. There you go. Oh, he's a good one. Oh, he's a good one, Tom. We'll get some line back on the reel here. There he goes again. Rainbow trout, and both rainbows and brown trout in general, are very aggressive, you know, and the fight, they have a tremendous fight out of them. And, you know, if you don't play them out, well, you'll break them, you'll lose them, you know. So you just have to try to tire them out. Not tire them out too much, you know. So when you're letting them back, when you're releasing the fish, that there is still plenty of fight left in them, you know. So the fish goes back safe and healthy. There you are, Tom, now he's in. Okay. Now, we'll take the hook from him and we'll let him back into the water. We'll just give him a chance to get his breath there now. There he's off, safe and sound.
Tom Hurley with that report from the North Tipperary Angling Centre in Ballinderry, run by Pat Stack. You can read more on the Seascapes webpage, which is www.rte.ie/radio1/seascapes. Now to Olympic sailors Ryan Seaton and Matt McGovern of Providence Team Ireland. Sailing in the 49er class, they secured a World Cup silver medal last weekend in Hyères in France. We hear first from ISA Performance Director James O'Callaghan.
Providence Team IRL have had a great day today. We've secured a silver medal in the 49er class with Ryan Seaton and Matt McGovern. They went into the day in third position but could have fallen back to, I think it was eighth, but have actually climbed up to second. So it's a major breakthrough in their progress towards Rio. It's their first medal at a World Cup event.
Feels absolutely amazing. Probably still waiting for it to sink in a little bit, but I think we've been thinking more about the racing today than anything. You know, it's been a great day again, you know, and three really tight races and all to play for. So I think that's still the thought, just that we raced really well, not that we got the medal.
We knew we could do it. We just had to get good starts and sail well, and that was what it was all about, you know. We have been consistent all week and that gave us confidence going into today.
From a pressure point of view starting today, you know, I guess from an outsider, we had the potential to finish 7th or 8th overall, having been sitting in 2nd, but at the same time we just felt happy, like we're there for a reason, you know. We've been racing really well all week and just sort of believing that we could do it again, so I don't think we were that worried about it, to be honest.
Ryan Seaton and Matt McGovern. Congratulations also go to Annalise Murphy and Saskia Tidy and Andrea Brewster, not forgetting James Espy. As the May bank holiday fast approaches, water sports clubs and training centres from Dublin to Galway and Donegal to Cork have joined forces to offer a unique range of free activities for children, teenagers and indeed adults. Sail Spree, an initiative developed by the Irish Sailing Association 3 years ago to encourage people of all ages out onto the water, will run from this weekend in over 25 venues around the country. On offer will be various free taster sessions in sailing, windsurfing and powerboating. Many clubs will also provide plenty of entertainment back on dry land with barbecues, demonstrations and talks across a range of different topics. You'll get to meet club members and find out how easy it is for you and your family and friends to get involved in water sports. You can find more details on the Seascapes webpage and on the ISA website, www.sailing.ie. Now on Seascapes to the open waters, and this tale from author of Sea Spray and Whiskey, Norman Freeman, on the adventures of Eustace.
I heard an unusual sea story about a warthog, that ferocious-looking member of the pig family. The fellow who told it to me was a cadet on a cargo ship that transported the animal from Africa to Liverpool, destined for a zoo in northern England. He said to me, "Oh, it was loaded on board in a big wooden cage in the port of Luanda in Angola. Everyone on board came out to see this wild creature." A man from the zoo, who had bought the warthog locally, was on hand to look after this beast. He supervised the placing of the cage on a selected part of the deck, where an awning was erected to protect the animal from the sun and let in fresh air and light. Bales of fodder were loaded on board, grasses, roots, berries, as well as straw to cover the floor of the cage. Then, on the evening before sailing, the custodian of the warthog went on the tear. He ended up in a seedy part of the city. He was last seen in the company of a buxom local woman. He never appeared on the morning of sailing. The captain was furious. "We can't wait for him. We'll go without him. We'll look after the Warthog ourselves." After they set sail, he called the cadet. "You're in charge of the Warthog. You must look after him as if he was the dearest friend you ever had." The cadet was at first uneasy about the responsibility placed on him. He was cautious. He stood carefully outside the cage. He noticed the two upward curved tusks and the razor sharp lower pair. On the head were four wart-like lumps that gave the creature its name. After a while, both boy and beast began to relax in one another's company. The warthog knew that the cadet was the source of its food and would come and place its snout against the wooden post of the cage at mealtime. The cadet leaned in and tickled its head. There was no question that he would enter the cage. He used a long-handled brush to sweep out the floor and lay a covering of fresh straw. He christened it Eustace because it reminded him of an uncle of that name who had very prominent teeth. All the crew came to see it every day. The captain often came down to watch Eustace. On several occasions, he sent radio messages to the zoo, reporting on the animal's condition. Everyone got concerned when the ship passed the Canary Islands and headed towards the Bay of Biscay. There, the temperature dropped and the sea became rough. A heater was set up outside the cage and Eustace huddled nearby. He made a sort of burrow for himself out of straw and lay low. Cadet and captain were relieved when the ship docked in Liverpool. Two men from the zoo, probably Chester Zoo, came on board and declared Eustace to be in fine fettle. They thanked the captain. The cadet was taken aback to overhear the captain saying, "I looked after him personally, as if he was the best friend I ever had." The whole crew came out to watch the cage being swung over the side by one of the ship's derricks. Someone shouted, "Goodbye, Eustace, old chap." Then disaster. The cage hit the railings with a loud bang. Two of the wooden staves were knocked out. Eustace, in a state of terror, escaped, running along the deck. Then he fell down a companionway and broke his leg. He lay there squealing. The men from the zoo had no option but to put him down with a humane killer. Everyone felt a little sad watching the carcass of the warthog in a sling being lowered to the dock below. The cadet heard someone say, "God knows Eustace was as ugly as sin, but he wasn't a bad creature just the same."
The tale of Eustace the Warthog from Norman Freeman. Last Friday evening saw a gathering of members of the Irish crew who were aboard the Astrid, which was lost last July, as they completed a reunion sail aboard the Spirit of Oysterhaven. The event was to launch a new club for Oysterhaven. Oliver Hart explains.
The new initiative that we're launching here today is really the development of our instructor training panel. Now, that's a training panel for 15 to 18-year-olds who train to become instructors. What we've done now is to take that a stage further and to develop that as a club concept where we provide the opportunities for them to come down on Monday nights during the summer and enjoy the facilities of Oysterhaven in a club-type environment. The other objective is to try to reach out and provide opportunities for people who may not otherwise have those sort of opportunities to go sailing. So people with disability or people who may be socially excluded or have difficulties or so forth.
Now, of course, you work in cooperation with a lot of the voluntary organisations, the likes of the Coast Guard, the RNI, and so on, and obviously Sailing Training Ireland and the ISA.
That's correct, yes. All of these organisations, it's like a family of support, really, and we're at the cutting edge of trying to nurture people, to get them interested in the water, get them interested in sail sports, and all of these organisations are there to help in one way or another. We've just finished this voyage this week with the crew from the Astrid, and they had a five-day trip in West Cork, and we've got a number of these planned nearly every other week during the summer, where we go into the harbours such as Glendore, Sherkin Island, Crookhaven, maybe into Skull, and then around the Fastnet, and a night sail back to Oysterhaven. Absolutely, and I think I commended their courage tonight because they did that and they were able to enjoy the week, and they got over any fears that they may have had as a result of the rescue. But as you say earlier, the rescue was like a textbook rescue, and it wasn't just, I mean, one can't praise enough the efforts of the RNLI to bring the youngsters ashore, but it was a huge community effort as well, and everybody from Kinsale turned out to provide blankets and food and footwear and transport to Dublin, help them find their passports and one thing and another. So there was a huge, and just the very agencies that we were talking about earlier, Sail Training Ireland, the Irish Sailing Association, all came on board to help where help was needed. The Oyster Haven Coast Guard Unit were out. All of these organisations have a very important role to play if anything goes wrong.
So what got you in the water in the first place?
Well, I started actually, a long time ago, and in Cove. I was a fisherman in Cove back in 1974, so that takes me back a long way. And I enjoyed several years trawling in Cove, and it was shortly after that that I got involved in windsurfing as a hobby. And my wife Kate and I discovered Oyster Haven shortly after that, and we thought, gosh, wouldn't this be an ideal place to teach people to windsurf? And it all really snowballed from there. We've also revitalized the Round the Sovereigns race in June, which is a windsurfing race around the Sovereign Islands. So I'm sure we'll be attending both events anyway.
The Spirit Trust website is www.spiritofoysterhavensailing.ie. The new naval service vessel, L.E. Samuel Beckett, has undergone successful sea trials in the UK in the past week. The ship, built by Babcock Marine in Appledore in Devon, is now at its new home at the naval base in Haulbowlin in Cork. The ship will be formally named and commissioned into the naval service on Saturday, the 17th of May. Interesting to read in the past few days about the revelations regarding the Lusitania and its cargo, making it a target. We'll be talking to the author of a forthcoming book on the topic here on Seascapes next week, historian, mariner and mollgogger Michael Martin.
Oh, the times was hard and the wages low.
Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
And the grub was bad and the gales did blow.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her. Oh, leave her, Johnny, leave her. For the voyage is done and the winds don't blow. And it's time for us to leave her.
I thought I heard the old man say,
leave her, Johnny, leave her.
You can go ashore and take your pay.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her. Oh, leave her, Johnny, leave her. For the voyage is done and the winds don't blow. And it's time for us to leave her.
Oh, her stern was foul and the voyage was long.
Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
The winds was bad and the gales was strong.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her. It's time for us to leave her.
And we leave her tight and we leave her trim.
Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
And heave this hungry packet in.
And it's time for us to leave her.
This weekend sees the launch of a beautiful book of photographs of our Western Islands by photographer John Carlos at the Inishbofin Arts Festival, We'll be talking to John on seascapes in the coming weeks, and we'll have copies of the book in our competition. Speaking of competitions, the answer to last week's was Irving Johnson was the man who inspired Ralph McTell to write Around the Wild Cape Horn. And the winner from the many entries we received is Kevin O'Halloran in Yall. Many thanks to all of you for your entries. A timely notice as ever from the Irish Water Safety for this weekend, requesting that you always wear a life jacket when on water and ensure that it has a correctly fitted crotch strap. Shore walkers should stay away from the edge and beach walkers should remain vigilant to the dangers of being stranded. Anglers should be extremely vigilant when fishing from the shoreline of Atlantic swells. Swimmers should swim parallel and close to the shore and be aware that water is still too cold for extended swims. In emergency situations, never hesitate to call 112 or 999 and ask for the Coast Guard. You can find many more details on the Irish Water Safety website, www.iws.ie. Next week here on Seascapes, we talk to author and historian Michael Martin about those revelations on the Lusitania. We'll have details on Calves Week and the latest from the Clipper Ventures Round the World Yacht Race as they count down to Derry. We'll remember the late Daphne Poach and Mould. A major survey that you can take part in by Inland Fisheries Ireland to improve fishing habitats. And we'll have details of the Ocean to City Festival and much more here on your maritime programme. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.